Communications Network. He's a community health nurse, and today Jay is going to present on creating safe, active family environments through public policy, addressing obesity among Pacific Islander organizations in Southern California. Please welcome him.
Have a day, everybody. These are the greetings of our four communities that we represent in this effort. So as you see, this is our greetings from the Marianas, Hapa'e, Aloha from the Native Hawaiians, Talofa, Samoan, and Malo'olele, Tongan. My presentation is based out of a county effort from Los Angeles County. And within that county, these are the four Pacific Islander groups that have worked in the effort to address obesity. I know many of you here in the room, when addressing obesity, a lot of us are thinking what not to eat, what should we eat, how are we gonna, what is BMI, how are we gonna address obesity, some of us are too big, some of us are too small. But in terms of the Pacific Islander community, and if you look at a world context, 7 of the 10 nations are Pacific Islander on the top. I believe it's U.S. is number 8. So when you think about that, and you think about the efforts that we're doing, is that nobody's going to address it for the Pacific Islander community unless we do that ourselves. So what this presentation is going to be about is what we are doing in terms of addressing obesity through a policy approach versus a education approach. I mean, there are some elements of health education involved, but we use this as a public advocacy effort to address obesity in terms of environmental change. So who are we? Safe, Active Family Environments is our group. It's a community action group, Pacific Islander Community Action Group, that stemmed from APIOPA, which is the Asian Pacific Islander Obesity Prevention Alliance in Los Angeles. And these are the members of our group. And it's a program that's spearheaded by the Pacific Islander communities in LA County through GCN, Guam Communications Network. The Pacific Islanders, and this is a map of where we are actually from. And I usually do these in my presentations, because when you talk about API, it's a really broad context. But if we're going to talk about Pacific Islanders, it's very essential that you understand where we're from and how obesity affects where we're at in terms of a world context. So we're consists of 3 island nations: Polynesia, Micronesia, and Melanesia. And Polynesia starts up here from Hawaii, going down to New Zealand, out to Easter Island. So all the island groups that are located in this area are in Polynesia. Micronesian Islands starts all the way westward from Palau, which is close by Philippine Islands, and goes up here to the Marianas Islands, out to Kiribati. And this area right here represents Micronesia. Melanesia is west of New Guinea. So this is Papua New Guinea, and it goes out to Fiji. Fiji is kind of like in the middle between Polynesian and Melanesian Islands. And it goes out here to New Caledonia. So these islands right here represent Melanesia. Our groups out here in Los Angeles, this right here is a little sample, and thank you for OCAPICA and Pacific Islander Pipeline for providing this information. But this is just a small area, and where the study is kind of concentrated in Carson, California, which it serves as a heavily concentrated area of Pacific Islanders in the whole nation. So it's really heavy with Samoan populations and with Chamorro populations. And I don't know if I could go through all these numbers with you, but it's here. some of the statistics, and you could even find out in the ACS and so forth, 68.4% of Pacific Islanders in the US are overweight or obese, the highest rate out of all ethnic groups. So if we're not in the top, we're probably around the top 3. Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders are 3.7 times more likely to be obese than the overall Asian American population. And one in two Samoan American fifth, seventh, and ninth graders are obese, according to, if we're going to go by the standard American BMI. Alarming, huh? Or you guys already knew that. So obesity in parks. In LA County, more than 2.6 million people live too far from the nearest park. So it kind of like, wow, if we're going to address obesity, kind of run, you know, go into a park, it's not that close. People who live within 1 mile or of a park are four times more likely to visit that park than those living like far away. So that whole concept. Park space in LA County is disproportionately concentrated in wealthy neighborhoods, and non-white youth have access to parks and playgrounds. So who hears from Los Angeles or who has been around LA County? So you guys know, if you guys been in cities within LA County, you could kind of see, oh wow, there's a nice park, really lit, it's on late at night, people like going to that place, versus if you want to go into the neighborhoods, it's like, yeah, they shut down early, you know, it's not as well kept and stuff. So that's what this is pertaining to. So the mission of the group was to promote healthy lifestyles by advocating for increased investment in safety and access of parks and recreation for families in Los Angeles County. Because the approach is not just telling you what to eat or telling you to run and address, but also to try to change the environment so that it's more friendly for people. Yeah, we want to use that. We want to play rugby there. Yeah, we want to, you know, do our thing, cricket, or play baseball, or bring out the kids and stuff like that. So that's how we thought that if we're gonna change things with obesity and take that public policy approach, we were gonna do it that way. So our action plan was taking an assessment of the neighborhoods, you know, densely populated by Pacific Islanders. So Carson, California was our pilot study course. And so what we did was to make an assessment of two different parks. We took one from a disadvantaged area, and we compared it to Torrance, where their park over there goes until like midnight. There's people running all the time. You know, there's less likely that you would see any kind of crime rates or crime going on, and gang activity and so forth. The other thing from our group was a development of recommendations from our group to the county in terms of changing this environment. Because you can't go over there and like, no, I don't like this in my park. I'm going to take the vacuum. This is not good. We're going to take the vacuum and we're going to fix it the way we want to. You can't do that. You have to have agreements with the county, of course, and like, yeah. Go in there, have your meeting. You know, this is what we would like. This is what the community likes. We would like to change these things. So you have to put that approach. And organizing meetings with the county parks and rec. So you can't really just go directly above to like to the county supervisor and stuff, because then you'll be leaping over agencies who are actually in charge of like the parks. So there's a protocol. You go talk to the head of the county parks and rec, and then, you know, if that doesn't work, then you could go obviously to the top. So our community assessment were based on four things. The first assessment we did was lights and walking paths. So when we surveyed Victoria Park, which you will see in a later slide, Victoria Park has lights, but at 8:45 evening, every evening, the lights shut off. And actually, the lights until 8:45 are really brighter than this. And so you could do anything. You could even throw a pin and you're like, oh, I could see it. But when it's 8:45, you're like, oh, where is it? Yeah, it's really dark. And so because of that, there's a lot of things that can happen when it's dark. You know, you can get beat up and nobody could see you. A rape can occur and nobody, you know, you could scream for dear life and you can't hear it. So that's what happens. You know, has happened and can happen, you know, when you don't have really lit parks. There is light, however, after 8:45, but they're like really dim, and it's even dimmer than this. It's maybe like cell phone style, so you need a cell phone. Yeah, I can see my way around. The second assessment we did was crime rates. So over we did an assessment on crime over there for the past 5 years. And as you know, statistics can show crime rates and stuff, but there's also unreported crimes that go on So they're like, do we believe it? Do we not believe it? Sometimes we can actually see the crime that's going on. Most of the time, that's not really reported. And if it is reported, it's already too late. Like, okay, what happened? Oh, nothing happened to me. So those are the things that can happen. And a third assessment is Megan's Law. Of course, we want to protect the children and so forth. So we wanted to see around the circumference of the parks where child sex offenders are located. You know, is this really an issue around this area? And also model programs, like what are the programs in other parks and see what's going on. Maybe we could jump on a bandwagon and kind of like model the stuff that could go for Victoria Park in Carson. And this is Victoria Park right here. It's located right here on East 92nd Street. This whole, it's really huge. I mean, I wish I could like show you, but it's really big. But this is it right here, and you can see some of our folks playing cricket right over here, some of the walkways. So you could kind of imagine if this, you see this right here, these are like the lights, and those are really bright. So if you've ever been to like a football game and so forth, it's that bright. But like I said, after 8:45, bam, and so you could picture, after 8:45, you probably can't see this. Yeah. Okay, So our strategy, do the community assessment, and then the development of these of the recommendations, meetings with the LA County Parks, city planners, supervisors, assembly members, and city council members. So we actually, as a group, have collectively been involved with officials at these different levels in order to address the environmental change. And so our initial recommendations that we set forth in our primary meetings were to keep the lighting on until 11 p.m. And why I say 11 p.m., we have to think about those who stay within like the city of Carson who have to work maybe 2 hours away. You know, like not everybody works in the same city that they live in. So we're thinking, okay, if we're gonna make this change, we need to account for those who work afar. And we think like, okay, I think they might work as far as, let's say, Victorville, which is about 2 hours away. That was like our cutoff point. And so if we think it shuts off at 8:45, then maybe 11 p.m., it'll probably give them time to at least enjoy the park, maybe about 2 hours. So you think, okay, they're gonna go to work they come back from work, they get off at 5, come home at 7, maybe get the kids ready and bring the family out to the park, so they got about 2-3 hours to enjoy. That's why we put 11 o'clock as the first recommendation, because that would give ample time to those families and individuals. Cleaner sidewalks with better lighting for walkways, and I talked about the lighting, but also cleaner sidewalks, because some of the sidewalks that are in Victoria Park are heavily graffitied, and it's like I don't know if I want to walk there. Maybe I'll walk on the grass. It's that kind of situation. So we thought that maybe if it's more enticing, has more input from the community, like, yeah, you know, I think a lot of us would like to walk on a walkway that looks like that. It would entice people to really want to come to the park and make their own walking program or something. Visible presence of staff and security during hours. So that's the safety issue. Like, you know, if you had staff that was there until 11 p.m., most likely, the tendency for you to commit anything or maybe have a fight or any kind of gang activity, it would be much decreased, because you have somebody there that could actually call, hey, something's going on over here, I need help during that time. So, you know, a presence of staff can address that. So we went our first time, and they turned us down the county had turned us down for some of those recommendations, so we revised our recommendations. And now it's extending the lighting until 10 p.m. They said, like, you know, we have budget cuts. We can't put it on until 11 p.m. 10 o'clock, we'll be able to work with that 10 o'clock. It's like, yeah, 1 hour kilowattage and stuff like that. So that kind of came into the whole equation. And then creating a walking path, I talked about that. Designating a space for a community garden. So that's making culturally relevant programming on a space of the park, let's say, like, you know, having Pacific Island vegetation. So if there are people who have like committed crimes, maybe this is their community service, is to help make this garden. adopting safe designation for LA County parks fitting specific criteria. So the group came up with recommendations as far as, okay, this would be designated as a safe park. So when you know, like, okay, I'm gonna go to a safe park, it has lighting hours to 10 p.m., clean, well-lit walking path, bathroom access during park hours, it's not locked, it's all clean, you could go inside, like, yeah, I don't have to go home. It's a far walk home. Or staff present during park hours, adequate programming for all ages, because in order for you to have those kind of changes, you also have to have active programming that goes on. So they know, like, yeah, we made the right decision to keep those lights on. And establishing a community park council consisting of volunteer community members. So this means establishing a council that will allow the people of the community to decide how they want their park to go. And you don't restrict it to just like, no, he can't do it because he's bad or anything like that. It has to be a whole community. You know, we're talking about gangs who are over there, having them involved in the process of making these decisions, because we're talking about everybody in the community. It could be the person who's over at that nursery doing their thing, and they probably don't live there, but hey, you're part of the community, your business is over here in the community. So those decisions make as part of this park council to change the environment for Victoria Park. So meeting with the county, access to meeting space, formulation of the park council, which I said, and then so in order for us to keep those lights on, you know, we always have to have community meetings during the time of 8:45 to 11. So like, yeah, we have that there's people, they're doing programming, right? Engaging the Pacific Honor community around Lenox Park, which is in a later slide, and lights on until 10. So Lenox Park is, if the things work over at Victoria Park, which they essentially do, we were gonna do it at Lenox Park. And Lenox Park is located in Hawthorne, California. And what's significant about Lenox Park is that it's right smack dab in between a heavily populated Latino community and a Tongan community. And the two communities don't really get along together. But if we try to address something through Lenox Park, then maybe there could be something that goes on. So we were talking about culturally relevant exchanges. So, you know, what's going on in the Latino community, you know, this is what's going on in the Tongan community. How can we dialogue? How can we come together? How can we have resolve so that we can address things and share this part and learn from each other? And so with some of the successes, formation of relationships with LA County Parks and Recreation, identification of key stakeholders, for example, like Samoan National Services, Nurses Association, you know, Guam Communications Network, the folks who are around the area who are instrumental in pushing policy to make these changes, and creation of community recommendations, as you saw in the previous slide. Some of those challenges that we have is that the LA County system, in terms of policy, it's not friendly. You're over there like, how do I do this? How do I do it? You can't even find it on the internet or anything. So we have to use our networks, like, you know, I want to do this, but what do you think is the best way to do it? Yeah. Budgetary cuts affecting recommendation decisions. And so I like alluded to earlier, couldn't have it at 10, at 11, but we could have it until like 10. Prioritized individual agency workload. So slide says it right there. And so our next steps, the model will be replicated in other parks in LA County. So for example, applying it to Lenox Park and hopefully other parks that have other heavily populated Pacific Islander populations. Collaboration with other ethnic populations in providing exchanges. And like I said earlier, that this is a way how we can exchange at Lenox Park with the Latino community and Tongan communities. And implementation of Pacific Islander pipeline programming. And how this is instrumental is those students, because in the Pacific Islander population, our high school students and those graduates and stuff, it's not really that high. We don't have that many professionals. But we have to start somewhere in addressing that. In addressing that, then, you know, we can. So, Nakulusi Jus Maasi, thank you. Mahalo, Waftai, and Maloa Pito.
You have a question for Jay? Anyone?